This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Want to remind everybody that we are doing post-game shows after every Razorback postseason game. Just a little friendly reminder there. We'll also be doing a live stream from our Facebook Live and our Periscope and our YouTube page. So be sure to check that out as well. Streaming live. I mean, every way that you can find a way to listen to us, we're going to be making it happen for you. So just want to do a friendly reminder to all of you there as well. It is a Thursday, one day closer to the weekend, and it's going to be a wonderful and beautiful weekend here in the state of Arkansas. I know a lot of people have plans because it is Memorial Day weekend after all. So do we get Monday off, Ty? We get Monday off, right?
Yeah.
Even though Tommy's gone.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not.
Well, you know, Tommy has, you know, we don't really have a holiday schedule, you know, like those holiday calendars that work sends out. We don't really have one of those. So I always just want to make sure and double check. But since Tommy's not here, I guess we can just say, hey, we're getting off on Memorial Day no matter what. So we're not going to be working that day. So looking forward to the 3-day weekend, though. And I know it's kind of like it's like a tradition. If you don't grill out or go to some sort of body of water, like, it's like, are you really celebrating Memorial Day? And then what point in time did we decide that Memorial Day was a holiday that needed the July 4th treatment without the fireworks? So I go, at what point did we decide that? I'm not sure. I know that Memorial Day has its meaning. I'm not trying to make light of the meaning of it all because it is a Memorial Day, something of remembrance. But I'm just saying that, you know, at what point in time did we get to the situation where it's like, you know what, we're going to have this type of setup. We're going to do these type of traditions on Memorial Day. But hey, no skin off my hide because I love those traditions and I love Memorial Day and the Memorial Day weekend. So that's coming up this weekend as well. We're going to have a chock full of stuff to get to today. Of course, it's a recruiting Thursday, so we're going to have some recruiting news, especially on the basketball side of things where Eric Musselman continues for, I mean, my goodness, he's got at some point in time, you feel like he's going to run out of roster spots. Gets another transfer to come in, which we will talk about that. We'll also, of course, get into the Razorback baseball game, not only last night, but the one that's coming up today. We'll have Tom Murphy, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, joining us in the 7 o'clock hour. Got Richard Davenport in the 8 o'clock hour to talk a little bit more about recruiting. And the fact of the matter is that Arkansas is lucky in a way, and the fact that they don't have to play these night games, because last night, or I should say early this morning, LSU and Mississippi State played. They played 17 innings. 17 innings. The game didn't end until the 3 o'clock hour in the morning, Central Time. That's brutal. So I'm glad that we didn't have to deal with that. But Arkansas yesterday, though, all they had to deal with was with Ole Miss, and it was a regular 9-inning game, and they get the victory 5-3. And we talked about this a little bit in our post-game show yesterday, that at this point in time, it's a matter of, all right, you got the game one victory, good. That's what you're supposed to do. You're the 2 seed, for crying out loud. You're supposed to beat the 7 seed in Ole Miss. You did. Now you got Georgia coming today. And, according to Dave Van Horn, you're throwing Isaiah Campbell, your ace, today. You're going to limit him, at least, I think it was to 80 pitches, roughly. That's what Phil Elson told us yesterday, is about what Campbell's going to get, 80 pitches today. So he's going to be limited. And if Arkansas is going to get the victory today, they'll continue to move on, but they'll get the day off on Friday. They won't have to play Friday, and then they'll play again on Saturday in the semifinals. So, you know, the situation is kind of weird when it comes to the SEC tournament, but either way, that's the path that Arkansas needs to go down. And I feel like, of course, if Arkansas is able to get the victory, that's nice. I mean, anytime you can get a victory in the SEC tournament, it's nice. It's a good thing. However, I think that there is something to be said about the fact that they're playing Georgia Bulldogs. the team that they have not faced this regular season, have not faced this year, a team that is right around where you're at as far as the national seeding, the national perspective, SEC play, they're pretty much right there with you. These two teams of Arkansas and Georgia are pretty interchangeable in a lot of people's minds. But luckily for Arkansas, the national seeds have not been placed yet. And if you look at some of the college baseball outlets like D1Baseball.com, some of the experts over there who do a really good job with it, they have Georgia right now pitted at the 4-seed spot and Arkansas at the 5-seed. Hey, you're both national seeds. That's all well and good. But it makes you wonder, though, if, big if, Arkansas was able to get the victory over Georgia today, would that change some of the minds of this committee who's putting together the regional, the field of 64, and placing the national seeds? Would they give the nod to Arkansas over Georgia to give them the higher seed? That's kind of what I'm hoping for. And it would kind of make sense. Because in the head-to-head matchup, we'll see what Georgia does with their pitching today, but I assume they're probably going to throw one of their better guys as well, just like Arkansas is. But in a one-game deal towards the end of the season, with one of the better pitching matchups you'll see, surely you'll just be able to say, all right, well, the winner of this game gets the little higher national seed. They get the 4-seed, and the other team gets the 5-seed. And I think that's fair. Now, there's probably a lot of you that are saying, well, what does that really matter? How big of a deal, how big of a difference is it between a 5-seed having to play the 12-seed, or at least being paired up in the regional of the 12-seed, or being the 4-seed and having to play the 13? Well, something we also discussed yesterday as well. Assuming that D1 Baseball and some of these other outlets are correct, or at least close to being correct, if Arkansas was the 5-seed, they'd have to play the 12-seed Stanford out of the Stanford Regional. And Stanford, as of right now, is a top 5 team, but yet they'd only get the 12-seed, which is always crazy to me. RPI matters, but according to the rankings, they go from being number 5 in the country to being just a 12-seed in the regional. Which is fine. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. But you would have to play that team if you were the 5-seed. But if you were the 4-seed, you'd have to play NC State. Team that's pretty good in the ACC, but not one of the better teams in the ACC. And a team that's not ranked in the top 5. In fact, they're just barely in the top 20. So again, that's not the main indication. That's not the for sure bracket. But my point in that is, being a better seed and going up against a weaker opponent, as far as the seeding goes, can be the difference. It's all about matchups, folks, in postseason play. And it's like that in every sport and in every league. Matchups matter. And for Arkansas, and for you Arkansas fans, you can say what you want. You can think what you want, but you want the easiest matchup you possibly can have, no matter what. Sure, you'd love to take on UCLA, number one team in the country, as early as possible and beat them. And put a flagpole down like Baker Mayfield in the middle of the Ohio State field and say, yeah, we did that. Okay, that'd be great. But the likelihood of that happening is far less than you beating up on teams like an NC State or like a Texas Tech. Teams that are good, but not to that level of good. You want the easiest path you can take. And this just in, the higher your seed in postseason play, the easier path that you have back to Omaha. So that's what the Razorbacks need to do. They can't control the matchups, but they can control today. And they can control having a higher seed, slightly higher seed in the national seeding. And if anybody has Georgia ahead of Arkansas today, and Arkansas wins it, they flip-flop those, That's the game. That's the end game. That's the what. That's what you want for today. You want to get that higher seed. So there is something slightly riding on the game today. Of course, it's postseason play in the SEC tournament. We know that there's always something, a little something riding on it. But this game in particular means a lot more than, say, if Arkansas was playing Mississippi State or Auburn or even LSU. This game means a little more because of the matchup you have against Georgia. Because it's always, folks, it's always about matchup in postseason play.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, Hogs! Holy hog!
I wanted to bring this up because anytime that the coaching carousel is happening in some of the major college sports, it's college football mainly is the one that's the most interesting. But college basketball has also had a lot of changes in the coaching realm. And, you know, even at Arkansas with Eric Musselman and being the new coach and the amount of excitement that's surrounding him and how everybody felt like they were on board and thought it was a really good hire. I cannot believe that Michigan, who is a really good basketball program, a basketball program that's been nationally relevant for the past 5 to 10 years.
Two national championship appearances,
few Final Fours,
deep runs, the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they're kind of like I wouldn't say they're a blue blood team, or are they a blue blood team? I don't think they're a blue blood. They've probably had some good years.
Tier two.
Yeah.
If you want to put them in, they're probably a tier two program.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. They're probably in the same realm as Arkansas, maybe?
No.
You don't think so?
No, they're above Arkansas.
As far as the program and historically like being called a blue blood, you wouldn't think they're a tier two?
It's just hard to categorize that because Arkansas hasn't done anything relevant in the last 25 years.
Right.
Or 20-something years. So.
Right, but I'm just going off of what people see as a historically a blue-blooded program. I see Arkansas not as a blue blood, but maybe something that's a really good program too, but just right under it. But either way, besides the point, Juwan Howard is the new head coach of the Michigan Wolverines. Juwan Howard, the former player of Michigan, who was part of that Fab Five team, is taking over for John Beilein, who, of course, is now the new Cleveland Cavaliers coach. And Juwan Howard has only been in the coaching profession since 2013 as an assistant coach with the Miami Heat. And if you really think about it, man, college basketball, and I think basketball in general, is so driven by splash hires or hires that get people talking, hires that you feel like could relate to recruits and to players, whatever it is, it's mind-blowing to me. Like when Vanderbilt hired Jerry Stackhouse, what was that? Like, he's only been an assistant coach for a few years in the NBA. And, you know, Michigan, which is a big-time program. You're taking a huge risk on Juwan Howard. And honestly, folks, if Juwan Howard wasn't a former player, if he wasn't on that Fab Five team, would they have even considered Juwan Howard? In all honesty, no. They wouldn't have. But he's a Michigan guy. He knows Michigan. He's from Chicago, so he can go in there and get some of the big recruits out of Chicago and all of that. My point is not just specifically Michigan, because I think it's just a god-awful hire. But my point is that I think in coaching in general, it is so, you can get blinded by making splashes. It's even happened here at Arkansas. I felt that, even though it's women's basketball and we don't talk a lot about women's basketball in here, I thought that when the hire was made from Jimmy Dykes, if you really looked at it, that was not the right hire. That was a hire that was made to make a splash. In a lot of cases, you see athletic directors do that where they just want to make the headlines. They want to get a story out there. They want to go viral, whatever it is. It happens more often than we even realize. And I just don't understand how, if you're a program like Michigan, you would make a decision like this knowing what's at stake. Like, one bad coach or one bad coaching decision can forever change your program. See Arkansas with Stan Heath. that coaching, and I'm saying Stan Heath was an awful coach because I don't think he was an awful coach. I mean, for crying out loud, he took over a bad program and led it to back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances and recruited really well. He wasn't a bad coach, but he was the wrong coach. And look how far it's taken and how long it's taken for Arkansas to even sniff getting back to where they were once. So, like, a bad coaching hire can make all the difference in the world. And it's just, I feel like in today, there's so many people that are obsessed with making a splash that you don't really do your research. You don't really do, you know, it's almost like it's not cool to hire a coach who maybe is a veteran coach, an experienced coach, a guy who knows his X's and O's. Like, that's not what people want to do. They want to get a guy that can relate to the recruits. They want to get a player that was in the league that can tell stories and that can go to kids' games and gyms and all that and really stand out. It's just, and I'm not saying this is just a basketball thing. I think it's just sports in general. So many times it seems like they're so focused on the pomp and circumstance of a coach and what he could bring to the table rather than can he actually coach? Can he actually win? It's all about, well, what can he relate to recruiting? So it's like, I don't know. I just feel like this is, it's been kind of getting worse and worse as the years have gone on with trying to just hire people that may not be good coaches, but they may. Who knows? But we know that they played and they're a big name, so maybe that can relate to recruits.
Well, hindsight's always 20/20 when you make coaching hires. Some are splashes, some are not. And for example, I wouldn't necessarily say that Chad Morris was a splash hire, and I know Hunter Yurcheck wasn't the one that retained him and,
right,
and got him over from SMU, but when he hired the women's gymnastic coach, Jordan Weiber, that was a splash hire. Olympic gold medalist. It's like 350,000 followers on Twitter.
Yeah.
And that's a splash hire. Just because you make a splash hire doesn't mean that it's going to be a bad thing. Now, for the biggest example I can think of is Penny Hardaway right now, who is the number one recruiting class in the country. It's a former player. It's a guy that beat Michael Jordan in 95 in the, that would have been the Eastern Conference Finals when the Magic beat the Bulls. So, again, we'll see what happens there. But, I mean, I think you're going all in against Juwan Howard pretty early because he hasn't stepped on the floor yet, hasn't coached yet. It's not like you could just replace John Beilein and the success he had. And I'm kind of with you. It's a wait-and-see approach with him, and I get the trying to hire former players because it doesn't always work. See Chris Mullen, St. John,
yeah.
See Patrick Ewing, Georgetown. I know he's early on in his career, but I don't know if that's going to work. But who, let's say Billy Donovan, who was linked to the job, said no. If you're Michigan, and I know it's a tier two program, it's a, I just, they, I don't know how many guys they vetted.
Right.
But,
and I don't know either, but I'm just saying, I would rather, this is just me personally, I would rather try to go to the route of being getting a small up-and-coming coach, which I'm again, I don't know who they talked to. I don't know if they got denied or whatnot. But that would have, I would have got rather gone that route than hire this guy, because Chaz actually just tweets in and says, Juwan Howard hire at Michigan would have been equal to Arkansas hiring Corliss, all-time great college player, but an NBA assistant with minimum experience.
Well, Corliss had,
yeah, he was a head coach at UCA.
Not minimal experience, but no experience at the collegiate level. Like, he didn't do anything at UCA, and that's disrespect to the greatest Arkansas basketball player of all time.
It did not work out well.
True.
Yeah, it did not work out well for him at UCA. But I get your point, Chaz, and that's kind of my point, too, is, like, I mean, imagine the difference in the approach that we would have had on this show if they would have, instead of Musselman, they would have hired Corliss Williamson, which it's like, you know, maybe it's not an apples to apples of comparison because, like you said, he has been at the college game and it did not work out for him at UCA. But to me, it's the reason I'm going all in on the Juwan Howard thing is maybe it's just because this is kind of like you're Michigan, man. Because, like, the Memphis example you brought up with Penny Hardaway, I still don't think that's going to work out. And I could be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll gladly eat crow on that because he is recruiting really well. But you got to do something with the recruits. But you also had to take into consideration what Memphis was when he took over. I mean, they had Tubby Smith. They were kind of just they hadn't really recuperated from when John Calipari was their coach and they were a national brand. People, they were always in the tournament. Like, they hadn't gotten back to that point. So they were kind of in the lull a little bit, and they needed some sort of spark. All right? I don't see Michigan as a program that needs a spark. Like, they're a great program. They're a program that just last year, a lot of experts were saying this was a Final Four national championship caliber team last year. Like, they didn't need a spark in Michigan. So, to me, this is the type of hire you would make if you've been down in the dumps as a program. It's been a long time since you've been relevant, and so you're just trying to provide some sort of fire to put under people. But Michigan's not that type of program. I feel like a lot of what coach that's trending up and coming in the business would not want to go to Michigan? It's a great job.
But maybe they wanted like their football coach and Jim Harbaugh, someone with Michigan ties. I mean, can you really get mad? And you're coming out and criticizing the hire, and he hasn't coached a game yet.
I understand. But the thing is that you, on a lot of coaching hires, though, you have to have an opinion on the matter.
And that's fair.
I mean,
but for you to just assume he's not going to succeed there before he's coached a game, I think is a little unfair.
Yeah.
I get your point, because with Alabama basketball, you had the splash hire in Avery Johnson, who won a finals in 99 with the Spurs, who coached the Mavericks in the 2006 finals, and then they hire him, and then you go in with an up-and-comer in Nate Oates from Buffalo. So there's a comparison there. But I don't think... Now, there's not numerous examples of former players. It's really more of the former star players having success, which Juwan Howard being part of the Fab Five, not as much as the NBA level where he was a star, but that Fab Five team was pretty heralded across the college basketball ranks. But I don't know if you could come out and definitively say you don't like the hire 100% before he's coached a game.
I think that you went from being way up here if you're Michigan to way down here. You went from having an all-time type coach.
Yeah, had a Hall of Fame. I mean, that happens, Sean. Like, the only way Arkansas wouldn't have drop off after Nolan Richardson is if they wouldn't have got Bill Self and John White had to screw that up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you went from Stan Heath, who got you, did some NCAA tournament games again. Wasn't the best hire in the world, but that just happened. You can't just go from a Hall. Like when Saban retires from Alabama and every Alabama fan thinks they're getting Dabo, that's probably not going to happen based on that clause he just signed with Clemson. So even if you get a really good coach, it's going to be a drop off. And Juwan Howard could end up being a pretty solid coach, but it's still going to be a drop off from a guy that took you to two national championship appearances. You can look at any same thing's going to happen with North Carolina and Roy Williams. Same thing's going to happen with Duke and Coach K. And I know Beilein's not to that extent, but he's in that tier two category.
Yeah, but Alabama's not going to go out and hire Greg McElroy as their head coach. I mean,
you don't know that.
And if they do, like, are you? Because
Jeremy Pruitt has been linked to that job after he leaves because he's an Alabama guy. That would be a splash hire since he's a former Alabama. I mean, there's. Splash hires, I know this is more to the extent because he's a big-time former player, but I don't know.
I just feel like if you're Michigan, this is a step back, a major, major step back.
It's a step back with anyone they hire.
Yes, but not as big of a one. Like, because you could have hired somebody who at least had a college, who at least coached college basketball, who at least gone to the tournament, who at least recruited in their lives. You could have at least done that.
Not arguing that. I'm just telling you that.
He said, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I'll be wrong, and he will completely prove me wrong. But
I don't think he's going to have massive success there. I just think you're blasting him once again before he's been able to step on the court.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that if Arkansas would have hired something, like if they would have hired Juwan Howard at Arkansas, I mean, just I can't imagine the reaction of what people would have had here in the state. It would have just been absolutely irate, that is for sure.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer, with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays, fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
We're talking about the Razorback baseball team and their victory yesterday over the Ole Miss Rebels, which is all fine, well, good, great, grand, wonderful, as they will be playing Georgia this afternoon, and Isaiah Campbell will be on the mound for the Razorbacks. But I wanted to bring this up. It was on social media yesterday, mainly on Twitter, that it was pointed out that Dave Van Horn, head coach of the Razorback baseball team, was spotted before their game going to the concession stand and getting a drink. And how he was just a man of the people. Just walking up into the concourse, full uniform, asking for a drink, paying for the drink, and then coming back down. So, whatever, you know, I didn't know what, I don't know how it's really done that way, but it is a little surprising because you would think, especially at the SEC tournament, hey, if a coach wants a drink, send a student manager, or they got drinks down there in the dugouts or back in their locker rooms, whatever. You would think that that would be the setup, but that wasn't for Dave Van Horn. Well, anyways, the great Bob Holt, who is one of the more curious of sports media members, not only in the state of Arkansas, but around the country, he wanted to get more information on Dave Van Horn and him going and getting this drink from the concourse. And they had a very funny back and forth and exchange in the post-game press conference yesterday.
I know what a big social media guy you are.
Big.
I saw on social media that you were in the concession line with fans like to get a drink, a Coke. Is that right?
Yeah. Did you need me to get you something?
No, I guess I'm just surprised that, you know, they can't bring you. I mean, what was the drink? And
well, here's no, I'm not going to advertise for anybody. So I was in line because it was the ninth inning. And we just got in here, and I thought, I'm going to go get me something to drink. So I've got my drink, and I'm about to pay for it, and all of a sudden the crowd starts screaming and yelling. And the guy says, somebody just hit a home run, the game's over. And I said, well, I'm still going to buy this drink from you. And I took it down, and I had it in the dugout. I enjoyed it, too.
So I'm just surprised that you guys – I figured you guys would have whatever you wanted to drink in the dugout. I mean, you have to go buy it?
I get per diem. I can buy a drink. I'm good.
Were the fans interacting with you at all?
I don't know. What's the big deal? He's just hanging out with people. Yeah. I'm just a person.
You're a man of the people.
I guess.
Okay. Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you, guys. What else, Bob? Anything?
So, like, when I heard this originally, it was great because, obviously, if you know Bob Holt, you know that he's just Bob. I mean, he's just a great guy, and there's obviously a relation there between him and Dave Van Horn. But Dave could not figure out why this was a big deal. That's like, hey, I'm just a guy going and getting to the concession stand and trying to order a drink. I will say and admit, it is a funny image just seeing Dave Van Horn in full-fledged uniform, coach's uniform, waiting in a line at the concession stand. Like, just like a regular guy that's waiting for popcorn and drinks, he's just hanging out there. So, I mean, it is a funny image, but it also kind of shows you just the type of person that Dave Van Horn is. We're just a few, I guess, how many days? I don't know how many days ago it was. I'm getting all mixed up. But just earlier this weekend, when the image of him was caught with the Texas A&M little kid that was obviously very distraught on the
Saturday
field.
Game.
Was that Saturday game?
Yeah.
Okay, so very distraught over not being able to know what he's supposed to do, couldn't find his parents or whatnot during the national anthem. So Dave Van Horn just called him over, and the guy and the little kid latched on to Dave Van Horn, and it was a great story and a great image, a great picture, and great everything. And it's just like, you know, when you see these stories and you hear these stories, I think it's fantastic. And I love to see anytime coaches, especially somebody who's as of the caliber of Dave Van Horn and kind of has the, I wouldn't say the mystery, but he's not like the most out there. He's not John Calipari, you know, he's not all over social media. He even kind of made a joke about how he's not even a big social media guy. He's not out there on social media. He doesn't have like all these crazy funny quotes that everyone's just playing on the radio all the days. He doesn't have just this big whopping personality. He doesn't. And so when there's that little bit of mystery to him, because he's successful and obviously he doesn't need a big personality or doesn't need to have that social media presence to be successful at what he does. So when you see him in kind of these human moments, it's a friendly reminder of like how much not only you appreciate the guy, what he does on the field, but also it's like he's just one of you. He's just a regular guy. He seems like a guy that you could just chill with, and how it's not a very big deal. And it's so seeing the human element of elite coaches is always a very fascinating thing to me, at least. And Dave Van Horn in this moment, he could not understand why is it a big deal for him to walk up into the concourse and get a drink, wait in line and get a drink? Why is that a big deal? Well, it's a big deal to a lot of us. It's a big deal to the media, but it's not necessarily a big deal to Dave Van Horn himself. And it just shows your perspective. And it just shows you, like, it's another cool thing that you can point to of like, hey, this is why everybody loves Dave Van Horn.
And of anyone on this campus of the three major sports, that's the guy probably most deserving to have an ego based on his accomplishments here at Arkansas. So the fact that he doesn't seem like he does at times is kind of cool, because there's a difference between having confidence and being confident in yourself, your baseball team, or whatever sport you're coaching, and then just having a cockiness and arrogance, unwillingness to just relate to people on a just a regular basis. I think of the dynamic between Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady, who has just accomplished so much throughout his career with the New England Patriots and how great he is, but he doesn't come across as just a regular good old American. He's got a moat around his house. He wears Uggs. He's married to a supermodel wife in Gisele Bündchen. And then Peyton Manning with the nationwide commercials, the Budweiser commercials, just comes across as an everyday American. And so as accomplished as two are, and Brady's a little above Manning based on the Super Bowls and some other things, I think there's a big difference between those two. When you look at coaches across the college rank, there's some that have an ego, some that have an arrogance, some that aren't as humanizing as others, like a John Cowher, Nick Saban. But because they win, because they dominate, no one cares about the human element side of them.
No.
But it's kind of cool when you have a coach like Dave Van Horn who displays both at times.
Yeah, and it's a rare thing because, like you said, it's so easy in the coaching profession to develop an ego. And I know that every coach is different because every human being is different when it comes to their personalities. I mean, there is no doubt that Nick Saban is a little bit different than Dabo Swinney. They're really successful coaches. They're national championship level caliber coaches, but they're different. And they're able to be a master of their craft having those different personalities. But I feel like it's so easy, though. Like, who would you think would be more approachable? Who would you think would be easier to relate to? Dabo Swinney or Nick Saban?
Swinney, yeah. It's not even close.
Yeah, it's not even a factor. And people respect Nick Saban, but they may like Dabo Swinney a little more. And it's the same way with a lot of different coaches. I mean, and even out here at Arkansas, there were coaches that came through that had a really big ego, that was not very approachable, that was not very friendly. I mean, I remember hearing stories about Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz, great coach. Seems like a nice guy, but he was not a fan of just kind of mingling with the people. That's not just not who he was. Bobby Petrino, really good coach. Did anybody feel like they could relate to Bobby Petrino in any way? Did anybody even feel like Bobby Petrino had a human element to him other than his sinful nature there towards the end of it? But you get what I'm saying, is that certain coaches, when they get to the level of success, they shut everybody out because they don't have time for you. They don't have time for it. All they have time for is winning. And even then, they don't have time for their, like, it's just, they don't have time for you. And if you're successful at what you do, you can get away with it. Because it's like, well, I'd rather have a complete jerk of a coach that hates me but wins than the nicest coach in the world that loves me and will hang out with me and loses. I mean, think about it. Brett Bielema was a pretty approachable guy. Seemed like a human, a normal guy, a regular guy. Seemed like a guy that just enjoyed grilling out and having a few brewskis there on a golf course. I mean, that's just the type of guy he seemed like. But he didn't win. Bobby Petrino was a machine. Like, he was a robot. He never showed any type of... I don't know if we ever... like, what does he sound like when he laughs? Like, that was the thing. He's like, you just didn't get that element to him. But people didn't care because as long as you win, you can be however you want to be. You can act however you want to act. So it's a very rare thing where you get a coach who's an elite level winning coach that has a personality that goes along with being approachable, with being relatable, and just being likable.
And I think that kind of the fans, as you mentioned, they kind of adored that. It just adds to another element why you like Dave Horn, Van Horn, not only because he's a good coach, but he has that side to him that people can see on a weekly, daily, monthly basis, whatever you want to list. And it just kind of is a reflection, I think, of what the Arkansas fan base wants to portray and embody when it comes to relating to other fan base, relating to others, and just how they want to be seen as. When you have a coach that embodies what your fan base wants it to, it looks good for the program, and that fans are just going to like you that much more. And again, winning needs to be first and foremost. It wasn't with Bielema. Great, great, happy-go-lucky, good guy, good to hang out with, really good on set. But it wasn't Dave Van Horn. It's front foremost, but he adds that element to the winning, John.
Yeah. I want a coach that'll be cool and that'll be approachable, but is also an assassin.
And it's seldom. It's hard to have that mindset and mentality when you're so focused and your career is so predicated on winning. But when you have both, it's few and far between, but it's quite cool.
Who would be the greatest coach? I know we have to get out of here, but who would be the greatest coach that had both of any sport, of any league? I feel like Pete Carroll was pretty much up there.
He's got a lot of charisma to him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going through like Phil Jackson, Red Auerbach.
You think Phil Jackson's kind
of... No, I'm just thinking of like the great coach in basketball, John Wooden.
And I think
football, it's Bill Belichick, obviously not.
No, not at all.
Walsh over at San Francisco. I mean, I'm just listing off like the greatest coaches at this point, and none of them exactly stand out as...
Because the ones I think of is like I said, Pete Carroll in football. I think Barry Switzer is kind of that way too. Really successful. Jimmy Johnson a little bit that way too. Just kind of a...
It depends on... There's two different sets. How that it's like coach, a player coach, or if like fans coach. Like sometimes they have a lot of charisma and they get along great with their players, not necessarily the fans and the general manager and the staff and other people, but just kind of depends on where you're quantifying the category on that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette to talk a little bit more about recruiting. Richard, appreciate you joining us this morning. How you doing, man?
Doing well, sir. How about you?
We're doing great here because the boss is gone, and anytime the boss is gone, it's always a lot more fun and laid back here this week. So, but there's a lot of things that obviously are going on in the recruiting realm, and it seems like every single time we have you on each week, there's some new basketball news, and that's exactly what happened yesterday as Arkansas got another transfer guard under Eric Musselman, Jacksonville University guard JT Note. Hope I'm saying it right, but it sounds good enough to me. It seems like it was a pretty good get. He was a guy who averaged roughly about 15.5 points per game. What can you tell us about him, and what was the story behind this buildup to him committing to Arkansas?
He just when he made his official visit last week, he just felt like he was at home, and the coaches made him feel like part of the team already before he even committed. He said, and he just feels like that he can go to Arkansas, and with the background of Coach Musselman coaching transfers, I think that right there is a big deal for a lot of these guys, and I think that's why he has so much success as far as getting guys to transfers to come to his university, whether it's Nevada or it's Arkansas, and when you have a track record like that, it attracts other guys that are similar. But JD, I tell you what, I like the all the guys that new guys that Coach Musselman's bringing in. But I really like this guy. I mean, he may not be may not have that name or coming from a school that's known for basketball or anything like that. But this guy, I mean, if you watch his film, his first step is deadly. I mean, that guy, he's almost impossible to stop one-on-one. And then he's so aggressive to the basket. Another thing, he led his team last year in rebounding at 6'2", a 6'2" guard. That tells you a lot about him because, you know, when you're 6'2", you lead your team in rebounding, that's a lot of want to, and that's a lot of desire. And I'm a big guy that on effort and desire and just being a huge competitor, and I think that describes JD. And he can definitely light it up. I mean, he led the team in scoring also, along with rebounding 15.5, and then he was a freshman of the year in the conference, Atlantic Sun Conference, and he averaged 15 points again, and he 4.7 rebounds. He shot 40% from the 3-point line as a freshman, 32 last year. So definitely can fill it up from outside. And I think when we look back a couple years from now, because he'll have to sit out, but I think we're gonna see a guy that Arkansas, Coach Musselman identified pretty early and jumped on him. And I think Arkansas fans are going to be very excited about him once he gets on the court.
Well, Richard, and when you have somebody like this come from a place like Jacksonville, a lot of cases, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but a lot of cases, some fans would say, okay, why would you want a guard from Jacksonville University? What benefit is that to you? Wouldn't you rather just go and get a highly touted high school player coming out of high school? And it's almost like they play the name game a little bit in basketball. What do you say to some of those people that may have that belief to say, well, if this guy wasn't good enough to go to a different big-time school, why would he be good enough to come to Arkansas?
Yeah, well, you're seeing a lot of these mid-major guys go to upper Division I schools and have success, and just because you go to a smaller school doesn't mean that you're not a quality basketball player. And I think that, again, when we see this guy come in, I mean, he's basically like a junior college guy, but he's played Division I basketball. He'll sit out next year and help his development and have 2 years of eligibility. If you look at his film, and I think that's what Coach Musselman, and I'm sure he checked with some other people, you know, about JD. But if you look at his film and just his athleticism, and then you throw in what he did as far as his assists and his steal numbers, I mean, the guy is just productive. And obviously, it's maybe a lesser. You know, conference, but still, that physical ability that just jumps out at you if you just watch his film.
Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette right now on the Morning Rush. Richard, we haven't really had a chance to really dive into the new hire of Chris Crutchfield to the Razorback basketball staff, but that's the move that they made. He came over from Oklahoma. It seems like it was a pretty solid hire. What do you know about him and his recruiting and all of that? And also, what have some of the recruits and some of the players that Arkansas is targeting said about the hire of Chris Crutchfield?
You know, I talked to Trey Alexander yesterday or the day before and posted something on Ho Huck Sports about his comments. Trey's a 2021 guard who's probably considered a top 25, top 50 talent in his class. I saw him earlier in the year in the warm-up. It was very impressive. Him, he's 6'5", 185. He's from Oklahoma City, and he's had a relationship with Coach Crutchfield, and very, very impressive. He had a lot of great things to say about him, talking about how he's down to earth and he makes you feel welcome. And that, even before, Trey started to blow up as a prospect, he just said that Coach Crutchfield just made him feel like he was special. And even before he could, really be pegged as a D1 prospect, he started building those relationship long before that he developed into a D1 prospect, and stuff like that kids remember because it's easy to for coaches to come after you once you've been identified as a high major prospect, but Coach Crutchfield and Trey developed a relationship long before that, and that really paid, really, really impressed Trey. And Trey plans to visit Arkansas this summer, and I think a large part of that is because of Coach Crutchfield, and he just has an ability to connect with kids, and he obviously did well at Oklahoma and recruiting some of the top talent there.
All right, Richard, let's switch it up a little bit and get to the football side of things. Recruiting's always going on in the football realm with Chad Morris and his staff. What's the latest on the updates as far as visits and commitments and all of that fun stuff when it comes to football?
Well, the next time that they'll have an official visitor on campus will be next weekend. Vernon Broughton, he's a defensive lineman from Texas, ESPN 300 prospect, four-star. You name a school and he probably has an offer from them. He's going to be coming in for an official visit. Then the next, the following weekend or the weekend next for official visits will be, won't be a weekend, but it'll be during the week, June 12th through the 14th. Several guys are going to be coming in for official visits and that'll be the big last weekend or official visits for the spring. Dylan Johnson, a very highly talented running back from Greenville, Mississippi. Mason Magnum. Magnum from Austin Westlake, who's already committed to him, and offensive lineman Brady Ward are just three of them uh, three kids that are coming in. Several others are possibilities. I just haven't locked in that those dates for official visits. And I think in June, because of the camps, are going to have several on-campus camps and several satellite camps. But usually in June is when things start to heat up. They got seven commitments right now, but I tend to think that you're probably going to see a good number of kids jumping on board in June and July.
There you have it, Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Appreciate you hopping on with us, Richard. Have a great weekend, man. We'll catch up with you next Thursday, okay?
All right, buddy. Take care.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.